It is a great honor to be joining you here this morning. I am so very thankful to be here. And I'm thankful for the grace and the generosity that has been shown to me and my family already. And I am excited, more excited, about the work that we will be doing together. I can see it. I can see it already. Less excited about this microphone that I have trouble getting stuck to my ear. It was about a month ago, as I was preparing to come here, and I was speaking to a friend of mine named Tracy, and telling her about all the sermons I had to prepare between then and now. I had counted, there were three Sundays, and then I had a wedding, and I wanted to do the one for here before I left, so that I could be prepared. Hint, I didn't get that one done in time, but I did it this weekend. And I had not, it wasn't just normal sermons, right? I had to figure out how to say goodbye to St. Paul's and St. Clair, Michigan. And I also had just a few weeks left to help them see where God is moving in that community of St. Clair. That God is still speaking to them, even if I am not there, to help them hear it. And my friend, as I was wrestling about what to do in preparation and all of that stuff, and then to prepare for here, she said simply, maybe you should just do that simple introduction sermon. You know, the one that says, oh, this is who I am, this is my family, introduce them. Now, Tracy knows me pretty well. And she knew she was making a suggestion that I could not fully embrace. Because there's a gospel here that is not so easy to work with. So I thought I'd give you a little clue about myself and this microphone. Excuse me. Tape. We are going to get some tape. Tape it down to my head. But we have this tough gospel, and it's hard not to go there. So I thought we needed to. So let's think back to last week. I know that's a long time ago for many of you to think about what was going on last Sunday, but we heard Jesus tell a group of Pharisees this parable that they call the parable of the two sons, right? Not to be confused with the prodigal sons, right? But these two sons. And one says, you know, I don't think I can do that, Dad, but then he goes and does it anyway. And then the other one says, oh, Dad, I am totally on it. I've got this. And then he doesn't do it. Right. And so Jesus asks the Pharisees, which did the will of the Father? Right? The one who did it, right? The one who did the work. Now, this question is not just some random question that comes out in the middle of nowhere. It's this question that comes in the middle of this great confrontation at the temple, right? And it's this confrontation that happens right after Palm Sunday. Jesus has made his triumphal entry. We are in, arguably in the text, we're in Holy Week here. And this is the very first thing. The Pharisees are trying to trap Jesus. Jesus turns it around on them and traps them. And he leads them to, this trap is the very trap that they were laying for him, a trap that they lose face, they lie, right? And then they cover their backsides. So he presses them on this, right? Is it about doing the right thing or claiming the right intention, right? Now they know the truth, and they are as troubled by the truth of this as we are. Okay. Well, then Jesus tells another parable. He goes right into it. He goes from there to this one, so they should be connected. A parable about a landowner who sets up this vineyard and leaves tenants to care for it. Okay. So then he sends some slaves, his own people, to go check on them, see how they're doing. And of course, the tenants brutally attack these slaves and kill them. So the landowner sends some more. Let's see if what will happen this time? And again, the same violence occurs. And the landowner sends his son, and the same violence occurs to him. So then when Jesus speaks of this landowner's response, he's giving them this sort of rhetorical question. If you want to imagine it this way, this rhetorical question that might sound like, what do you think the landowner would do in response? They've done this to your people three times. What do you think the landowner is going to do? So it's not a surprise when Jesus says, well, the landowner is going to go and kill them all, torture them first, kill them all and replace them. Brutally killed them for their brutality. Now, at this point, most of us have some good Christian programming that kicks in. We've all have something from our past, whether it was from church or from our families, that comes and starts talking to us when we're in the middle of hearing the story, and that little voice that says, well, come on, this is just an allegory for God and Jesus. Right? It's simple. The landowner sends his son to die. That's totally just Jesus talking about himself in a crucifixion. Like, Jesus is there, right? Landowner, God, Jesus, son, dead. Makes sense. Right? We also get this same, a similar little voice that comes on our shoulder and tells us, well, isn't that why we're supposed to do what God tells us, right? We got the law at the beginning. Right? We do what God wants us to do, or else we're going to find ourselves punished, just like those tenants. And then we ignore the implication of this, which is that it sounds as if God is a God that would torture and kill his own children. I don't think that's true. I hear those voices. I also hear this other voice, one that reminds me of the way Jesus talks and the way Jesus teaches. And Jesus very, very rarely speaks so directly and plainly, this is this and this is this, just go and do it. No matter how much we wish that were the case. Jesus doesn't speak in the language of law, but in the poetic of story. And Jesus' story reveals something really important to us about God and the kingdom by showing an example of the kingdom breaking through our world, right? Because I don't think that the vineyard is the kingdom and the landowner is God. I don't think it is that straight a comparison. This isn't a story of the world God has created as it is that we live in now, as if this is exactly what God wants. But it's the world we keep creating. And Jesus reveals how the kingdom peeks through into this world. When Jesus introduces the story, he says, there was a landowner who planted a vineyard, put a fence around it, right? Dug a wine press in it, and built this watchtower. Several years ago, Rose and I went on this self-guided wine tour in northwestern Michigan, up in the Traverse City area. And we stopped, and we tasted, and we ate lunch, and we had this great time. It's a great place. The hills are great for growing grapes on the west side. Not a single one was surrounded with a fence, and none had a watchtower. You know what places have fences and watchtowers? And I don't think of vineyards, I think of prisons. And it was near the outskirts of Jerusalem just a couple of chapters ago. It was just right here as they were about to go in. And Peter is asking, how many times must we forgive? Jesus, how many times must we forgive someone who's done something horrible to our community? 7 times? And Jesus says, no, 77 times. The landowner doesn't forgive anywhere near as many times as Jesus tells us to. Sounds like three times he gave them. So this parable Jesus is telling the Pharisees is not some clear picture of the kingdom, not like that. It's a picture, perhaps, of the world as the Pharisees see it. Right? Brutal, selfish, destructive. Right? Not at all the way that God made it and dreams for it. So remember then, we discussed last week in the gospel, who Jesus said gets to be first in the kingdom. Who gets to go in first? Who's the head of the table, right? The tax collectors and the sinners. In order to be more direct, the traitors and the prostitutes. They get to go first. They get the highest place, the honor. The rest of us still get in, of course. We just have to wait our turn. After the parable that today, Jesus quotes the Torah, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. It's not just about Jesus. This is not just about Jesus being brought low and raised high, but it's about God's vision for the world as the kingdom. This is how God operates, that the rejects go first. They're served first. It's time for the ignored to have a say, for they get none now. For those that the world rejects get an opportunity to actually shape the future. Now, in my experience over the last 6 weeks, it has become abundantly clear that Jesus is not condemning St. Stephen's in this passage, right? The warmth of the welcome, the enthusiasm in all the emails I have received, the well wishes and the offers of help to me and to Rose and the family have been abundant and truly amazing to me. So we are not supposed to see this as if we are this primary audience for Jesus' parable. We aren't those Pharisees. However, it's helpful for us to remember the negative teaching, right? The make sure you aren't like this kind of parable. The this isn't really what the kingdom looks like parable, right? Because then we know when we are off track. If that sounds a little familiar, that's the reminder so that we can turn and chart a different course. We always need reminders of what the kingdom does and does not look like, right? And who it is for. Right? We get it elsewhere in John that in God's house there are many rooms, a very familiar one, and we know that we are welcome, and we know that other people are welcome too. They get rooms too. People we may not be so excited to have with us. Sometimes our neighbors are noisy. Right? Our neighbor has a dog. Barks at weird times. Or maybe people that behave in different ways. Or people that communicate different expectations than ours. And then, after we see this, the positive teaching becomes easier to find. That we're called to care for the kingdom, celebrate our guests and tenants, and give rest to the sojourner. So, now that we know what it doesn't look like, may we all be eager in our growing relationship and to continue in our lifelong discovery of what the kingdom does look like. And may we do so with great hope, honesty, and thanksgiving.